So, hello everyone. I'm Bhante Sujata, and we've come here to do some meditation together. So for the first little while, I'll talk about meditation, then we'll do some guided meditation. So for this afternoon, I wanted to talk a little bit about this thing that we call mindfulness. And in our modern world, word mindfulness is very much a buzzword and become very popular. And I wanted to just take the chance to just kind of drill down a little bit and look more closely at what this quality of mindfulness is. Because often it's treated as it's a very kind of broad sort of catch-all term. First thing, the most important thing, the most basic thing to understand when we talk about mindfulness and mindfulness practices is that mindfulness practices are, they're always about some form of like inner reflection, looking inside yourself. And they're also always in some way based on a quality of awareness. So in the Western tradition, until recent times, the word meditation actually meant something like to think about or discuss something in a reflective manner. And that's not what we mean by mindfulness. What we mean by mindfulness has a lot more to do with a quality of just open, non-judgmental awareness. But that when we're using the word mindfulness, we're actually translating a term from Pali or Sanskrit, the Pali word sati, the Sanskrit word smriti. Sati is much easier to say, so I'll just say that. And the word sati, the root meaning of the word sati is in fact memory. To recollect something. And when we first hear that, it sounds quite paradoxical, because in meditation we're always supposed to be about being in the present. So what does it mean when you meditate, you're supposed to sit there and be remembering all kinds of things? Remembering what I had for lunch today. Remembering the argument I had with my friend earlier. That's all the things we actually do in meditation, but it's not necessarily what we're supposed to be doing in meditation. So what then does it mean to say that mindfulness or sati is memory? And this is a very interesting point. I won't go into too much of the detail and background into it. But the idea here that, just very briefly, the idea as to why it's connected with the notion of memory is because memory has some kind of idea of continuity. And you think about it. What is it that links up one life, your life? What is it that makes your life yours? Your memories yours? Right? Why don't we remember somebody else's, the lunch that somebody else had today? And so memory provides like a continuity, one thing after the other. And so it makes sense if you think about it in the context, say, of breath meditation, that you're remembering to be aware of the breath. So you're not forgetting what it is that you're supposed to be doing as you're sitting there in meditation. When we think about it that way, then of course it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Because that's usually what happens when we meditate. Right? You sit down to meditate with all good intentions. I'm going to watch my breath for the next half an hour. And then about 5 minutes later, no, 2 minutes later, no, 30 seconds later, no, 5 seconds later, no, one breath later, there we are doing something else. We've forgotten that we were there to watch our breath. forget what we're about, forget what we're doing. We're drifting off doing something else. So if we're mindful, we don't forget. We remember, oh, okay, that's what I'm supposed to be here for. Be aware of my breathing. And if we're just aware of our breathing, it's quite phenomenal, really. All of those things that we've dreamed about in meditation, you know, like actually becoming peaceful, right? All of those things, they happen remarkably quickly if you don't forget. So this is why the process of meditation is not about, you know, how hard you're going to try or what tricks you're going to use and all of these kinds of things. It's about being mindful. It's about not forgetting what it is that you're doing. So this mindfulness in Pali, when it talks about mindfulness, the word that it most often uses to describe that process of mindfulness in meditation is the word anupassana. Anupassana. And anupassana has a meaning, the word anu means along with or following or continuing. And pasana means to see or to watch or observe. And in English, when we translate that, we usually translate that as contemplates. But that, I don't know if that really kind of captures what that word is about. What the word really means is to keep on watching. Well, so to kaya anupasana, we translate as contemplation of the body, what it really means is to keep on watching the body. Keep on watching the breath. Anupassana. So when we look at it this way, we realize how simple it is, how easy it is to meditate. Don't let anybody tell you that meditation is hard, especially don't tell yourself that meditation is hard. You know what's hard? Filling out tax returns, sorting out your relationships, getting to work on time every day. These things are hard. All you have to do in meditation is not do any of those things. Not do your tax returns, not worry about what's going to happen at work, not worry about your relationships, not worry about food, not worry about sex. Not worry about finances, not think about anything. And just remember what you're there for. And when we can remember what we are there for, then we give our breath the chance to do its job. This is the key to meditation. It's not our job, it's not my job to make myself peaceful. And this is how we always think about it, isn't it? Oh, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to meditate, and then I'm going to become peaceful. We think that it's something that I'm doing that's going to make it become peaceful. And then we get ourselves involved. And then when it doesn't work, we get upset and we get frustrated. And it's all because we've got our egos involved. It's not your job to make your mind peaceful. It's your breath's job. Step out of the way and let the breath do its job. Okay? Imagine that you felt tense, your muscles were tight or something like that, and you went to get a massage to loosen up your muscles. And you're lying there on the massage table and the masseur is trying to do their job. And you keep on talking at them and saying, oh, blah, 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 worry about this, worry about that. And then you tell them, oh, do this bit, do that bit. And then you try wiggling bits of yourself to sort of make them loose or whatever. The masseur can't do their job. You only have to do one thing, and that's just lie there and do nothing. It's the same thing in meditation. That's all we have to do. And just sit there, do nothing. Remember what it is that we're there for. And your breath will automatically calm you down. That's why we meditate on the breath, or on loving kindness, or whatever meditation we're doing. That's why we use those subjects for meditation and not other things. Because those things are inherently calming. The breath by its nature is calming. And it is trying to calm you down all the time. Right now, as you're sitting there, your breath is calming you down. So this is what it means to use mindfulness in meditation. It doesn't mean anything spectacular or anything fancy. It's a very plain, a very ordinary quality. But it just brings that continuity. And when we have that continuity, our life, our mind is not so disconnected. It's not so scattered off. First this thing, then that thing, and then the other thing. It's just one thing. Everything else is let go of just one thing, and then that thing calms you down. So this is what mindfulness is really about. So we've got time for meditation now. Let's do the next 45 minutes. We'll do some breath meditation. So we have one question from overseas, and this is from Christian from Germany. Hi, Christian, how are you going? And first, let me just start by saying that, dear Ayupa, I'm disappointed in you. You haven't given me a question. Every other time I've been here, I've got a question from dear Ayupa from Bangkok, our good friend. I haven't got one today. I hope that you're okay. I'm worried about you now that we haven't got a question. Anyway, okay, Christian from Germany. How can I overcome judging in meditation? Okay, well, I when I was talking about mindfulness before, I used the phrase non-judgmental awareness, and I don't know if you kind of noticed, but there was probably a slight hesitation in my voice before I used it, because I'm not entirely happy with that particular phrase. Yes, it captures something about what we're doing in meditation, but it also perhaps has, I'm not sure if it has exactly the right kind of connotations that we're looking for. But in any case, often when we're meditating, we want to have a sense of openness, right? We want to have a sense of equanimity. And one of the insights, or one of the things that we learn through wisdom, is that there's something inherent, or there's a quality in the mind of wisdom that arises from clarity. This is the root of it, the root of the non-judgmental thing. Just bear with me for a moment. I'll come back to it soon. We think about like light and darkness, right? Knowledge and ignorance. Okay. When the sun comes up on the world, right, the sun comes up on beautiful and ugly things. It comes up on good and bad things. It comes up on things you want to be there and things you don't want to be there. It doesn't change that, right? But the sun makes it easier to see those things. Yeah? Same thing with awareness. When you're aware of things, you can be aware of good and bad things. We all know that in our meditation. Sometimes we're all too painfully aware that our thoughts are going down very negative, very bad ways. And we want to be able to solve that. We want to be able to fix that. But the very fact that we are aware of those things means that most of the work is done already. Most of the time, when things are brought to light, that's all you have to do. So there's an inherently healing and positive quality to awareness. And that's why we tend to hide all of our bad deeds away. We don't want them to be seen. We hide them away from others, and we hide them away from ourselves. So when we bring a quality of awareness to things, it tends to be the case most of the time that all the good things will flourish and will grow, and the bad things will gradually fade away. And so so introducing a judgment on that is just superfluous. It's a waste of time. And in fact, it undermines what we're doing, because instead of being aware of those things, we're judging them. And they're two separate things. So how we bring that quality of non-judgmental awareness to it? Well, let's think about what we do if we're a scientist. Okay, we want to do an experiment, and we want to see whether, you know, we do this X, Y, Z, then what the result will be. Now, of course, any good scientist will tell you that a null result from an experiment is just as valuable. Okay, you do the experiment. Will this new medicine actually help to heal this illness? Right, from a scientific point of view, getting a null result is just as good. Of course, if you want to get it published in a journal, that's not the case, because nobody likes null results. They're boring. And especially the people who are paying for the research. They think they're boring. But for you as a scientist, you know it's just as important to know what doesn't work as to know what does work. Okay, famous quote attributed to Thomas Edison when he tried so many times to figure out what kind of filament to use in a light globe and tried hundreds of different materials before finding what would work. And then somebody asked him, you know, didn't you feel depressed when you had so many failed experiments? And he said they weren't failed experiments, they were successful experiments to see what did not work to make a light globe. Right? So it's the same thing you look in your mind. You see what is actually happening. And if you say, oh, there's greed, there's hatred, there's delusion, that's not a failure, that's an successful experiment to observe what happens when there is greed, hatred, and delusion in your mind. Okay? That's what we mean by saying non-judgmental. So we have to kind of get out of this way of thinking of thinking in terms of good and evil, right? We should banish this term evil, I think, from the Buddhist vocabulary. Okay, there might be some politicians that we want to use it of, okay, but generally speaking, right, we don't want to have the word evil. Evil has this implacable nasty, it's like this nasty malevolent force. It's just not how we Buddhist way of thinking about things. Instead of thinking about things as being good or evil, you think about whether things, what kind of results do things have? Does something lead to happiness or does it lead to suffering? That's all. So when we say something's wrong or bad, all you mean is that leads to suffering. So there's no concept in Buddhism of something being unnatural. Right? It's not a concept you find. Everything is nature. We're surrounded by nature all the time. Everything comes from nature. Everything goes back to nature. Right? But our question is, does it cause harm? And so you look at it, oh, does this tend to lead to harm? Does this tend to lead to happiness? And so the more that we can understand it clearly within ourselves, then the more that you can encourage those good qualities and let those bad qualities fade away. You don't have to do anything to make the bad qualities go away. They will pass away by themselves. They are already impermanent. As soon as you're aware of them, they're on their road to the end. And so again, it's only our conceit which says that it's up to us to solve that problem. It's not your job to solve that problem. It will solve itself. So just stay out of the way, be patient. And so by practicing in that way, little bit by little bit, gradually, you'll find that all of those wholesome sides will increase and all the unwholesome ones will decrease. So next time, you know, just practice that next time that you see that in meditation, next time you see yourself getting angry about something. And you know, don't try to not be angry. You look at it, you say, oh, this is a great opportunity to investigate what anger feels like. It's just straight out of the Satipatthana Sutta. When there is anger inside him, he knows there is anger inside me. Right? It doesn't say when there's anger inside him, he says, now I need to get rid of that anger. Right? He says, he knows, oh, this is what the anger feels like. So you feel it, you know what it's like. And the more you bring that quality of awareness to it, the more that you're taking away the roots of that anger. And what will surprise you is that even though you don't do anything to get rid of the anger, right, it will go away by itself because it's impermanent, because it's conditioned, and because the conditions for the anger are no longer there. So this is the real way of developing that non-judgmental awareness. So but it doesn't mean that you don't understand the difference between good and evil. Of course you understand that. You know these things are good and these things are bad, right? And so that's not what it's about. But what it's about is it's saying that our response to those things should be through understanding and not through passing judgment on them. Okay. Any questions? Yes.
Sorry, a very basic question. Can you just clarify the difference between mindfulness and meditation?
Can I clarify the difference between mindfulness and meditation? Usually when people say this is a very basic question, they'll then say something like, can you just explain this consciousness thing? Something like that. The difference between mindfulness and meditation, there really isn't any. If you like, you'd say meditation is a whole process, right? And mindfulness is one of the qualities we bring to bear on that process. Yeah? Actually, in the suttas and in the way the Buddha taught, mindfulness is often more or less just a synonym for meditation. Okay, so the classic passage when it talks about you're going to do meditation, it says, you know, you go to the forest and you sit down, you cross your legs, and then the Pali literally says you establish presence of mindfulness. Okay. And what it means, of course, is to start meditating. So this is something I've actually talked about with Ajahn Brahmali, whether we should translate sati in the Buddhist text simply as meditation rather than as mindfulness. And in most contexts, actually, that's what it means. Now, there is also, having said which, okay, it's also the case that that mindfulness is broader in its application than just in meditation. Okay, so mindfulness is a quality of mind. Right, meditation is a specific spiritual practice. Okay, so that quality of mindfulness is there whether you meditate or not. Right, you have mindfulness at least sometimes, or you lack mindfulness. Right, and so mindfulness is part of development of everything that we're doing, whether it's in terms of keeping up precepts or if you're studying. Right, if you're reading a book, then you want to bring mindfulness to it so that you know we've all been there, right, where you flip four or five pages and then you're like, I have no idea what was on those four or five pages, right? So there's your mindfulness is gone. You've forgotten what it is that you're doing, yeah? All of these different kinds of things. So mindfulness is much broader, and in fact, it applies in every aspect of our spiritual life, from the most simple right through to the most profound. And even an enlightened one is said to be like perfected in mindfulness or something like that. So mindfulness is a mental quality, is very broadly applicable across whatever it is that we're doing. But it's most characteristically emphasized in the practice of meditation, especially in the beginnings of meditation, when you're actually starting to establish your mindfulness so that you don't forget what it is that meditation's all about. Okay? Very good. So we're at 4:15 now, so we should maybe wrap up. And let's finish by paying respects to the Triple Gem.